This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network Humanist News. Network News.
It's Wednesday, January 27th, 2010, and you're listening to Humanist Network News, an audio production of the American Humanist Association. I'm your host, Jenda Huang.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine. We are podcasting live from the Stephen Yule Imagine No Superstition studio. Happy New Year, Jenda.
Happy New Year to you, Jess.
I was just curious if you made any New Year's resolutions this year.
No, I don't believe in New Year's resolutions. I think every year I never keep them.
You never keep them?
Never, ever keep them.
So you don't believe in them because you can't follow through?
I can't hack it. No, I think it's more, you know, it's kind of, if you want to make a resolution to change something about yourself, I think you should be able to do it any time of the year and not just with the turn of the calendar.
Sure, sure.
What about you? You got any resolutions down?
I did not make one this year. The last one that I can remember was 2 years ago, and my resolution, I'm a little bit of a sugar junkie, and so my resolution was to not be addicted to sugar. Like, I think that I have a sugar addiction, like some people are addicted to, you know, tobacco
or
nicotine, I guess, or crack, sure, or alcohol. For me, it's sugar, and so I decided to cut it out, and my partner is a holistic health counselor. And she set up this little, cleansing fasting diet for us. So for the first 3 days of the year, we couldn't eat anything but raw foods.
Wow.
And then we sort of gradually started adding things in, but minimally processed. And I just want to say that starting a diet of only raw foods on New Year's Day, which means it's the day after New Year's, which means you probably went out like me. And it was one of the few years that I actually had alcohol, and I actually got drunk.
Right.
I didn't do that very often.
Right.
So I actually woke up hungover, and I couldn't have any, like, comfort food. All I could eat was, like, raw vegetables and fruits. I was not happy.
That sounds unfortunate.
Yeah. And so since then, I don't think it's because of that, but since then, I have not made a New Year's resolution.
All it takes is that one traumatic experience.
Yeah, but it worked, though. Like, for a while, I kicked it. I kicked my habit. Of course, I'm back on the sauce. I'm all over
it. I was going to say, right? I think I remember you imbibing fair amounts of sugar recently. So.
Yeah, last time we were recording, probably. That's kind of what gets me through here. Anyway, so enough about New Year's resolutions, Jenda. What do we have on today's show?
Well, first, before we kind of get into exactly what we're going to be talking about, you know, there's Haiti and everything going on with that. So hopefully people who are listening, you've been donating money to humanist charities or to another good cause. I think the AHA through Humanist Charities has raised over $15,000 toward relief efforts in Haiti. And there is a humanist on the ground, actually, someone who's connected with the Harvard Humanists, who I think maybe was either on the way there or he at least had been doing things on the border of Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
Wow. So it's your money's not going to get lost in the shuffle, right? We've got...
Exactly. We have someone on the ground that I believe he was saying either be best to donate money through Humanist Charities, which will get to him, or if not through him, then Humanist Charities can kind of redirect that money to one of the aid agencies that he suggested, because since he really is there, he kind of
right.
is knowing what's actually effective and what's working, what's not, and all the kind of logistical issues that they're still facing as they try and get aid to everyone in the country.
That's great. So folks, remember, if you haven't already, please make a donation at humanistcharities.org. And our humanist on the ground that Jenda mentioned earlier, his name is Sebastian Velez, and he will make sure that your donation gets funneled to the right organization. And speaking of Sebastian, Jenda, I think he would be a great future guest on one of our shows. What do you think?
Definitely, yeah. Hopefully we can get him in a future episode, and he can kind of talk about his experiences and everything that's happened, everything that he saw and everything that happened to him as he was down there.
Yeah, that sounds great. So folks, stay tuned for that. This month, Jenda, what do we have on our plan?
Well, for the podcast this month, Jess, I attended the Heads meeting, and I actually had to drag myself out of bed early on a Saturday morning with this.
It
So this isn't just the sounds of a typical humanist gathering. The Heads meeting is a yearly meeting of minds of the humanist movement. This, you know, involves all the atheist groups, the free thought groups, the skeptics group, ethical culture, humanistic Judaism. And it's the leaders of these organizations kind of coming together in an informal way in order to be able to talk shop, to kind of exchange ideas, to they get to know each other better in a lot of ways, because there hasn't been a lot of formal cooperation in the movement. And something like this is actually pretty new. It started maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and there hasn't been a sustained effort like this for all the national leaders to kind of come together once a year, just spend a day talking with each other, getting to know each other, and talking about the future direction of our movement. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a formal structure. There's not like a president or anything like that. It's just an informal way for all the leaders to get together. So I kind of was on the edges of the Heads meeting, and I was able to get some interviews with different leaders. First, of course, being our boss, Roy Speckhart, the executive director of the American Humanist Association. I'm here with Roy Speckhart, the executive director of the American Humanist Association, and my boss. And Roy, we're here at the Heads meeting right now in Washington, D.C. So I'm wondering if you could first tell the listeners a little bit exactly what is Heads and what's kind of the background or the history of it.
Well, I guess part of the theory was when I came to the AHA about 8 years ago, I was shocked by how divisive the community was. I mean, it's true that any major movement has a diversity of opinions, whether it be the choice movement, which I'd worked in, or the environmental movement. But the way people would work against each other, who were supposedly on the same team, was really disappointing. And so we thought one of the keys to changing that was getting people in the same room, getting people to know each other, and so that they knew that we weren't really didn't really have horns on our heads, even if we were atheists to the humanists or humanists to the atheists.
So have these meetings evolved over the past few years? I mean, are pretty much all the major groups involved in? Is this something that local groups can do, or is it only something kind of restricted to national organizations?
Well, this particular meeting is set up for the national non-theist organizations. We have occasionally had a local group who was present where the meeting was held, get involved. But part of this is also based on the idea that the religious right itself has been doing similar strategy sessions over the years. And we hadn't been doing that type of coordination and saw this as an opportunity to do that. These meetings have changed over the years in the fact that the goal is being realized to some degree, in that people are really getting along better. Groups are working together, more collaborations, more coalitions, all sorts of things like that are happening.
So is this basically the humanist conspiracy that the religious right likes to talk about and bash us over the head with?
We're finally getting there.
So what does, I mean, speaking not now, not talking so much just about Heads in general, but as the executive director of the AHA, I mean, what does the AHA get out of the coming to the Heads meeting? And I know we've co-sponsored it in the past, and I know you're attending every year. Like, what's the benefit for each individual organization?
Well, for the American Humanist Association, our goal is to spread the word about humanism and advance humanist ideas in our culture today. This meeting helps us to achieve that goal in part because it is furthering our message. It is getting us to get together on PR issues and other matters that help accomplish our goal. And so whether it's the AHA performing that function or other organizations or a group of them, it's still getting the job done.
So a little more broadly speaking, what does the AHA have planned for 2010? What can listeners kind of expect to see this upcoming year?
One thing I'm excited about is we have Bill Nye, the science guy, as our Humanist of the Year. He'll be presenting in San Jose in early June at our conference. We also are in the process still of launching our LGBT caucus group, which I think is a great way for us to reach out to a new community and to emphasize the issue that is important to almost all humanists. So I think that's something that we're happy to do. And we're going to expand upon the advertising work that we did this year that was so successful.
Great, great. So what would you say your vision is for the movement 5 years from now, or kind of where do you want the movement to be 5 years from now? What's your picture of it?
5 years from now, I think we're going to have more of the critical mass. We'd hoped 5 years ago to have a seat at the table through the Secular Coalition for America, through lobbying efforts of the American Humanist Association and that of the Center for Inquiry. We have a seat at the table, even if we're not always welcome at that seat. 5 years from now, we should really be leading the efforts on the issues that we care about of church-state separation and other matters important to non-theists.
So there's been some talk here. I've heard about the possibility of a unity conference. Do you see something like that happening in the near future?
From the beginning, when Margaret Downey suggested the idea of a unity conference, I've been for it, and the American Humanist Association has as well. Our board voted to support it as long as we can make it work. There is a lot of details to work out to do something like that. Our conferences of our individual groups often are democratically structured and have to serve certain functions of membership meetings and the like. And to do that for a dozen groups gets very complex. I think we can overcome it, and I look forward to that happening at some point.
All right. Roy Speckhart, Executive Director of the American Humanist Association. Thanks for talking with Humanist Network News.
Thank you for having me on.
That was Roy Speckhart, Executive Director of the American Humanist Association. And next, we're going to play a little montage of the rest of the interviews that Jenda conducted at the Heads meeting. So the next guests that you'll be hearing from are Jan Meshon from Free Thought Action, Minga Fitrell from The Brights, Brother Richard Haynes from the Atheist Nexus, and Ron Lindsay from the Center for Inquiry. And the first thing that we wanted to do with these interviews is just to find out what each of these groups were up to and what their plans were for 2010.
Jan Meshon.
Most of our effort right now is working with United Core. I serve on the board of United Core, and we wanted to get that off the ground and try to work with as many groups as possible and have local coalitions so they can really drive our message and really help organize people. And without going into great detail, we're cooking up the next scheme. We started the Don't Believe in God, You're Not Alone billboard campaign, and right now we're working on the next one.
Minga Fitrell.
Well, I think we'd like to be continuing on our morality project. One of the things we're doing is focusing on the scientific basis for the concept that human morality is a natural thing. It's come about naturalistically. We want to continue that project and move it into public education to be able to give some basis that we are good without God because it came about in a natural way.
Brother Richard.
Well, we're trying to build upon what we've already established through having representation in all 50 states and in 162 countries at the moment. And so we're trying to put together an action network to where if something occurs in a local area, that we can mobilize the troops, so to speak, and really put people in touch with the different organizations, both locally and nationally. Just so there's such a small percentage of the nuns, as we were just speaking about, that are joining our organization. So putting all the grassroots people together.
Ron Lindsay.
Well, we have a lot of different things going on. We are going to continue with our campaign for free expression, which has a number of different programs and activities associated with that. First up is our cartoon contest. The closing date for that is the 15th of January. We're having entries submitted on the theme of critique of religion. This is going to be a contest. It's going to be judged by professional cartoonists. And I've looked at the entries, can't comment too much on it since I'm not a judge and don't want to sway anyone. But I think the quality of the entries overall is quite good. As I said, we're continuing with the campaign for free expression. We're going to have some other events that are planned. We're monitoring developments at the United Nations, which continues to debate this issue about passing a resolution about defamation of religion. on Capitol Hill. Our Office of Public Policy is monitoring legislation that's of importance to the non-religious community and to the scientific community, and we'll be working on that. And our usual host of educational programs. This year we're trying something a little different. We're going to be holding institutes around the country at our centers. Traditionally in the summer, we've had like a three-week-long summer institute in Amherst, New York. This year, we kind of decided to take that on the road. So we're holding sessions in Indianapolis, also in Washington, D.C., and probably some other cities. One topic will be critique and examination of religion, and that's proved to be very popular so far. That's a few of the things we're doing.
So a lot of these groups have been attending the HEADS meetings for the past few years, so I asked exactly what does each group get out of coming to HEADS. Jan Meshin.
I think the main thing is all of us getting in a room together really enables us to find ways to cooperate. You know, a great word that was used last year was co-opetition, that in some ways, you know, there's always the competition there between different groups, not really free thought action so much, but certainly some of the larger, more established groups for who's going to join which organizations and donate to different organizations, but that there's really room to cooperate and grow the entire pie so that everybody's slice is larger. And the amount of cooperation, and especially from just the, I guess, about 3 years that I've been active in the movement, you could really see cooperation is really becoming the norm instead of the exception. And it's really tremendous. There's so many great organizations out there. When we combine efforts, it's amazing what we're able to do.
Minga Futrell.
Well, one thing I learn is the various agendas of the different organizations that are having an impact in these times of great flux, where more people are coming out and acknowledging that they are either atheists or, as people who affiliate with the Brights typically are, people who have a naturalistic worldview, which means no supernatural. It's not just deities, but it's no supernatural of any kind. And so I learn from the different organizations, the heads of these different organizations, what they are doing. And that's very, very important. Then you see where you have commonalities, where you have differences. You can put forward a little bit of your own agenda. The agenda that the Brights Net would be interested in is putting these kinds of things into a civic framework. That means all of us on a level playing field here in the United States. We would hope that our fellow citizens, be they religious or not, would be acknowledging us as equals and recognizing that we have, as citizens, even though we may have a naturalistic outlook, we have as much to contribute and are just as principled as anybody else.
Brother Richard.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Atheist Nexus is, you know, a social networking site. Despite the name, it's for non-theist is the only requirement to be a member. We have 14,000 members at the time, and it's, you know, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. There's so many great organizations already, like the ones represented here at HEADS. And what we get out of it is by promoting the other groups, it helps lift our ship and pay advertising and different things like that.
Ron Lindsay.
Insight into what the other groups are doing, ideas that may not have occurred to us otherwise, being able to see possibilities for cooperation and collaboration in certain areas. Obviously, we have the contact information for all these people, but it's a lot better when everyone's together. You don't have to worry about trying to get someone on an email or phone, and just the synergies of having three or four or five people in a conversation, which you might not have otherwise. So you get a lot of benefit from coming to these meetings and finding out. You know, we're not trying to find out the secret plans of our organization, but just their ideas, you know, their projects they have and their initiatives, and see where we might be able to work together.
Next, we wanted to see how each of our guests felt about the possibility of having one conference movement-wide in the next few years.
Jan Meshin.
I think it will happen. I certainly hope it does. I think that it's a great opportunity. I think Our movement needs to create the and not just create, but also make visible the critical mass that we have when you take our numbers. And people need to see that we're out there in those kinds of numbers before we're really going to get the consideration that I think that we deserve as a very large percentage. We're one of the largest minority groups in America. And we've been invisible up to now, and just in the past few years, our visibility has gone up, and I think with that visibility, you're going to find that we're going to be considered much more mainstream, which will be good for us, but I think it's also going to enable people who are sitting on the fence and feel that this isn't even an option, even if they're with us in spirit, if you will, for them to come out and say, you know what, that's really the way I feel about the nature of life as well.
Minga Futrell.
I would love to participate in a kind of unity endeavor, whether it's a conference or a march on Washington, as long as it were framed in a positive way and drew on the fairness ideas of the American public. As long as it wasn't an us versus them, as it wasn't, hey, the atheists versus the world. Instead, it played on the fairness, the idea of justice, and the fact that we're citizens and we should be treated fairly. We shouldn't, the media and our fellow citizens shouldn't engage us with bigoted statements that somehow demean us. And if we could have a unity endeavor, agree on framing it and marketing it so it's picked up by the media as something other than a non-believers convention, then I would be very in favor of it. I'm not sure that we can pull it off, because we have kind of two elements in our movement here. We have the ones who really want to bash down religion and you know, keep it down in society. And then we have those of us who really just want to come out at equal rights. If we could frame it as secular citizens, a kind of a great awakening. Hey, we are awakening. We are part of the American citizenry, and we want acknowledgement and participation. Secular, I think we should play off the word. We have the Secular Coalition already. We have some secular charities. We are secular people. I think we should go with what we have.
Brother Richard.
You know, it might not be popular to say, but I'm going to say yes, probably something will happen. Whether it will be those of us at heads doing it, I don't know. It needs to be done. There needs to be more unity. The general non-theist in America really don't care about our organizations, and we're finding that more and more. So if not us, somebody will do something like that. I'm confident.
Ron Lindsay.
I don't know. I'm hoping it will. There's a lot of groundwork that has to be laid. I think there is definitely a strong sentiment, not just among the leaders here, but among our supporters for some type of unity conference. The problem is it's still very nebulous at this stage, and I think it really needs a concrete proposal that people can look at and find out exactly what the commitment's going to be, what's going to be involved before it really take off. But I'm hoping that will happen.
So I'm very much a vision person. I always want to know what people are thinking about the future, especially when it comes to this movement. So the final question I had for all the leaders was, what is their vision for our movement 5 years from now, or where do they expect it to be, or where do they want our movement to be? Jan Meshin.
I think our numbers are going to go up tremendously in the next 5 years. I think our visibility is going to go up. I think our influence is going to go up. One of the things, I think our political influence in particular, obviously we haven't been given a whole lot of attention up till now. One of the things that you'll notice when we look at we saw the charts of a lot of the research that has been done on the percentage of people that are non-theist and some of the categories they fall in, that we tend to be independent. Not Democrats, not Republicans, more than virtually any other group. And I think that we could very easily become a very, very large swing vote. That not that we're looking for any special favors, but that we're looking to work with people who don't actively work against our interests. And I think that this is going to become an issue for some of the major political parties, for both of the major political parties, that they will ignore us or work against us at their peril if we choose to assert ourselves.
Minga Fertrell.
I would like to see a piece of the movement having an impact in public education. We just were presented with a lot of information about the profile of Americans in terms of their perspectives with respect to gods and religion and so forth. I would like for us to have a presence in schools that shows accurately what we are. And that doesn't happen right now. In social studies, for example, students learn about Hinduism, Buddhism, they learn about Islam, they learn about Christianity and all of that, but they don't learn anything about this concept of having a different outlook, a secular outlook. As far as in the media, that's not my area. The BrightsNet is a constituency of individuals, so it's not setting an organizational agenda. It's basically asking individuals in their spheres of influence, wherever they are, with their families, with their workplaces, and so forth, to come out and be who they are and start to make decisions and play a role. And so that's kind of, we're kind of like a Johnny Appleseed trying to get people to focus on being open about who they are and starting to play a role in society. And so we don't have an organizational agenda for where this movement should be. And because I'm sure if you talk to a half a dozen Brights, you're going to have a different agenda from each of them.
Brother Richard.
Well, I think at the moment of trying to encourage people to come out of the closet and declare their non-belief will continue to grow. But once we've established that and telling people what we don't believe, it's important that we start then saying what we do believe. And that's where things like humanism will come into play, and to where it's going to become I would like to see non-theists get the respect that other people do. No one would suggest that a Catholic isn't moral or doesn't have morals, or Republicans, Democrats, Buddhists, whatever. So when people like to say, well, the nuns have no morals, I mean, that's really a bigoted, prejudiced statement. I would like to see that change, and I think it is changing as we progress over the next 5 years. Acceptance, I guess.
All right, so those are my interviews with some of the leaders from the Heads meeting, and I would like to take this moment to point out what I think, Jess, correct me if I'm wrong, is a historic first. I think this is the first time the Humanist Network News has ever had someone from the Center for Inquiry as a guest on our podcast. Am I right?
You are indeed correct, Jenda. And we were very happy to have them.
Yes, and hopefully we can get Ron Lindsay or someone else from CFI to come back sometime soon and talk with us some more.
That would be great.
All right, Jess, that's our show for this month. Hopefully no one will be too mad if we're exposing humanist conspiracies here.
So listeners out there, if you have anything to say about our show this month or any other show, or if you have suggestions for show topics, please feel free to submit a letter to the editor. You can do that at our website, AmericanHumanist.org/HNN, or you can just send us an email directly at HNN@AmericanHumanist.org.
And for all those weeks you're not listening to the podcast, you can read the Humanist Network News e-zine online and get it through your email. If you want to check it out online, go to AmericanHumanist.org/HNN.
And be sure to check out our podcast page, which is AmericanHumanist.org/HNN/podcast. There you can listen to all of our back episodes, you can download our archives, and you can also read show notes from every episode. On each show notes page, you'll see links to all of the folks that we've interviewed and any links for projects or events that they might have mentioned.
All right. Thanks for listening. And I'm your host, Jenda Huang.
I'm your host, Jess Constantine.